You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey, Ryan. How are you today?
Pam, I'm doing very good. How about you?
I'm good. If you could think of two words that we say often on the podcast, what would those two words be?
I'm going to say probably some sort of words like communication and advocate. And then probably a close third is going to be free.
Yeah. You know, whenever I think about all the podcasts that we've done, it seems like we've covered those three things a lot in the topics. But I'm super excited about our guest today because I think we can all learn from her and gather some tidbits that maybe help us with as being a caregiver or being a patient.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times on our podcast, we talk to folks like our guest today who, for lack of a better way of describing it, have turned lemons into lemonade. You know, they've made a great stride, or they've made something great happen out of a bad situation. And that's no different than today. And I too am very excited. Joining us today is Erin Gallion, and she is has a great story, you guys that are listening. I can't wait for you to hear all of the things. But when Erin's sister, Megan, was diagnosed with cancer and a serious lung disease in 2017, she was determined to be an unstoppable advocate for her. With over 20 years of experience in the pharmaceutical industry, Erin used her professional knowledge to ensure Megan received the best care possible. Now, not all of us have someone like Erin who has all this experience that can help you. So that's what we're going to do today, is hopefully help you become, as she says, an unstoppable advocate. Unfortunately, Megan passed away in 2018 at the age of 47. 2 years after her sister's passing, Erin published her first book. Now, Pam, this is really cool. Erin's first book is called Badass Advocate, Becoming the Champion Your Loved One Deserves. And Badass Advocate teaches family caregivers how to lead the charge when dealing with a loved one's health crisis. And Erin is going to share with us today some of the lessons she learned and really how to make a difference in a loved one or your family member, a neighbor in their own healthcare experience. Erin, thank you for joining us. We are so happy to have you today.
Thank you. What an introduction. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and talk about communication and advocacy.
It does seem to be some of our hot topics. And even when we're talking about something completely that you wouldn't think, oh, this is going to go down this path, this is going to go down this road. And all of a sudden, Pam, right, we come right back to communication and a lot of times being your own best advocate.
You know, and that's something that's so hard to talk to your physicians. How do you talk to your care team? How can you get your point across and get the answers that you want to know? So, Erin, what kind of tips do you have for our listeners today?
Well, it's funny. The first thing that just popped into my mind when these things happen, because you don't always know what's going to happen, is preparation. So that's a key word for me and something I talk a lot about when I talk about patient advocacy. The more that we can prepare, the better we will be able to handle those situations and advocate for our loved one. So how do you do that? Well, there's a few ways that I talk about in the book and when I do speaking engagements. So with my sister, Megan, so she lived in Charleston, South Carolina, and I lived here in Dallas. So I wasn't always with her, but when I was, and I was able to go to doctor's appointments or visit her in the hospital, I made sure that I was prepared to meet with that physician or nurse. Those nurses are a wealth of knowledge. So don't forget about those nurses. How you prepare is come together with your family, with the patient. Don't forget about the patient, especially if they're very sick. Sometimes we leave them out of conversations, which is something you do not want to do. They are the one who you're talking about. They're the ones who are going through it. So if they're able to communicate, if they're healthy enough to do that, then make sure they're included. And then get together with your support team. So I talk a lot about building a support team, the best way to do that. For me, I was blessed with a family who was tight-knit. My mom My brother, my dad passed away when I was 20 from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So this was our second go around. So we did learn a lot the first time, but now we're all older and more mature, meaning my siblings and I, not my mom. She was already mature. But so we learned a lot and we were able to use those things to our advantage. So we would come together and before any doctor's appointment, no matter who went, we would communicate with each other, typically over text message, and start to share what are the questions we need answered. And something really cool happens when you start brainstorming. And I am in learning and development for my full-time profession. And we talk about this sometimes when we do exercises, the power of getting together in a small group and how individually you may come up with 5 ideas, but you put 3-4 people together and you can come up with 15, 20, 30 within like a 2-minute period on one topic. And that's what we did. So, you know, I might have a question for Megan's oncologist, and then my mom may have a different question. And then it might trigger something in my brother's brain of, oh, well, you know, you're going to ask this. What about this? Or her husband might say, the last time I was there or since her doctor's appointment, she's been acting this way, or we've had this issue with her diet. So all of these questions start building, right? And suddenly you've got like 15, 20 questions that need answering. So we would put those together. Typically, we would use the notes app in a phone and share that out. That way you can edit it. You don't want to keep it in your text message chain because what happens is it gets lost because you continue to text. You know how that is, right? And then you're scrolling. You don't want to be scrolling up when you're talking to a doctor. I would be so panicked and stressed if I was looking for those 15 questions, thinking I'm going to forget. I've missed an important question. What did my sister's husband want answered? That would be a hot mess. So
meanwhile, the doctor's ready to get out of the office.
Right, right. You're going to make the best use of the time. And I have a tip for that too. So we use the notes app, write them all in there. And that way you're organized and ready to go. Speaking of time, you want to always make the best use of your time with that physician or nurse, right? They've got many patients. You are advocating, hopefully, for one person. Hopefully you don't have multiple people that you're advocating for at once. They've got many. So having empathy for them, they're not trying to be rude, disrespectful, not right. 9 times out of 10, you've got that one outlier, but for the most part, doctors have great hearts and they're trying to do their best. So let's make the best use of our time together. How we did that was organize your questions. The most important ones are at the top. So you filter them. Now I've got 20 questions. I don't know if I'm going to get 20 questions in with this doctor. That's a lot of questions. So let's narrow them down. One, are some questions the same question, just formed in different ways? Eliminate those. Are some questions, could they be answered by the nurse? If it's walking to a doctor's office, the nurse is the first one to walk you back, take your blood pressure, do all the vitals. Ask her or him those questions that she or he can answer versus the physician. Saves you time. That just eliminated another 5 questions. If you're in the hospital, same thing. Those nurses are in there like every hour checking vitals. Use that time wisely. They will share information with you. I had one situation where my sister had been in the hospital for a while at this point, and a nurse who I had never met came in and I asked her a question. I don't remember what the question was. And she said, oh, right, you're like a doctor or nurse or something, right? I started laughing. I said, no, I'm not. I had just educated myself on my sister's disease, her vitals, what was going on with her. You don't need to be an expert in the medical field to be a great advocate. You just educate yourself about your loved one, which you probably already know a lot more than what you think. So anyway, then you eliminate some of those questions by asking the nurse. And now let's say you're down to 5 or 10 questions and you put them in order. These are the ones I need answered more first because they're more critical. And then if the last few don't get answered, it's okay. You know, I'm not in panic mode. That really helps you to make the best use of your time when you're with that physician. And then you get what you need.
Yeah. You know, in your book, which again is a awesome title, it really is, because it's not enough to just be a great advocate, an awesome advocate. You want to be like the best superstar that there is. And I think you mentioned kind of an 8 step, if you will, ways to be a badass advocate. right? And I think the very first one, you know, and we've talked about this, Pam, as you said, is like building an unstoppable support team. I think that's the words you use, right? Unstoppable support team.
Yes.
Tell our listeners about what that means and how to go about that.
Yes. And if you notice, that's the first tip that I have in the book, because it's kind of the foundation for everything that you do. The best thing to do is sit down with that patient when they're first diagnosed. If you're already deep into this, it's okay. It's never too late. You can still sit down and say, who do you want to be around? Because things will happen with the patient, and you both know that is uncomfortable, that is embarrassing, and maybe you don't want Bob, your neighbor, seeing you in that situation. Maybe he's not the best choice to be on your core support team, right? But that doesn't mean he can't help in other ways. So get that core support team, those, I say between 5 and 10 people. You may like less, you may like the larger team. It depends on the patient and the dynamics of the family. Get those people together and make it very intentional. It's almost like business. It's getting your team together and saying, listen, we're here to support. I'll use Megan as an example. That was my sister's name. We're here to support Megan. We're going to work together. Here's what's going on. And then start with the patient before you meet with the team, talking about some roles that people can play. And what I say is, think about strengths. Some of us are very good at asking questions. Well, if that person come to doctor's appointments, awesome. Some people are really nurturing and caring, or they light up a room. And maybe that's that person you pull in when the patient's at a dark time. Or, you know, there, or maybe someone is very organized and they can organize like a meal train. I always say, like, tap into your teenagers if it has to do with technology, because that's what they're awesome about, right? They're great at technology. So yeah. If you want to set up like a Caring Bridge page, I don't know if you're familiar with Caring Bridge. That's one of many websites that offer a way for families to communicate and keep in up to date with the patient. Tap into that teenager, especially if maybe you have a teenager as a child and they want to be included, which they probably do, in the care of their parent, or maybe it's a grandchild. So I think there's so many ways you can tap into people's strengths and have them help. Yes, they're helping the patient, but they're also taking the pressure off of that main caregiver. Our main caregiver was my mom for both my father and my sister, and it's a lot. It's overwhelming. It's exhausting. And you don't realize they're not just taking care of the patient, they're living their regular life too. Life doesn't stop just because someone's sick. Yeah. Bills need to be paid, the dog needs to be walked, the dishwasher needs to be unloaded, all those things. So if you can get people to support, even in the smallest ways, it makes a huge difference.
You know, there's a fine line of not stepping on the patient's feelings or boundaries. How do you go about setting those? I mean, how can a patient go about setting those boundaries? Like, you know, I only want so-and-so in the room when we talk hard questions or embarrassing things, because mm-hmm. I think that's hard for patients to talk about or find that person or designate them, because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
So such a great question. First of all, that, in my opinion, should never be put on the patient's shoulders. So if it was me and my sister, which we've had conversations like that, I'd be the one being that voice. And some people might not like it, but as we talked about at the beginning, the reason why you're a badass advocate is because you are willing to kind of step out of your comfort zone and do things that maybe are not your normal character. Always focus on, I'm doing this for my loved one. It is their health. It might even be their life on the line, depending on the situation. So I always had to remind myself, this is for my sister's health. This is for my sister's health. I am the one here for her. It doesn't matter in the end if someone's feelings get hurt. I know that sounds insensitive, but when it's this serious,
yeah,
that's what's most important. And don't make the patient be the one. They should just, as my mom would say, they need to focus on getting healthy. You need to focus on taking care of them.
Right. Yeah. Those are such great words. Aaron, one of the podcasts I listened to that you were on, you talked about how one of these people that you brought on to the support team, I think you called them the director of delight.
Yes. Oh, yes. She still is. It's my cousin, Jenny. So it's that person that walks into the room and they just light it up. And my sister was, she was a former Division I athlete. So imagine being very active, mom of two, still involved in lacrosse, and coaching and working full time. And then all of a sudden you cannot walk to the bathroom without an oxygen machine. That mentally, emotionally is going to weigh on you. So my cousin, who was the director of Delight, and I didn't call her that at the time, you know, these are kind of titles I came up with later on, but she would come in from Philadelphia and just light up the room and bring joy to my sister during a very dark time. And she would bring joy to my family as well. Not just Megan, but we were all in a dark space. Bring the girls gifts or whatever it is, take them to the zoo or to go get ice cream and make things a little lighthearted. We all kind of need that person when your loved one's so sick. And if you have someone, which I think we all probably know at least one person like that, bring them in for that. Even if they're not on your core support team, not everyone has to be in the day-to-day, you know, taking you to doctor's offices, getting medication, helping them with the bathroom. Not everyone has to be involved in that, but you can bring them in for bonuses, maybe we can call it.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it was like making the call to the bullpen, you know, right. Bring in, give me the righty, bring in the director of Delight.
You know? That's right.
It was just,
that's right. And a lot of times that kind of personality is happy to do it because that's who they are anyway. Right. It's not like, oh, I have to do this. No, they're the person that loves to come in and be a ray of sunshine. And it's just a natural gift that they have. And we're so grateful to her for being that for my sister.
So you talked about not living in the same town as your sister. Mm-hmm. What are things that people can do that if they don't live by their survivor, what can they do from far away?
I love to talk about this because I feel like this is where people get stuck and they feel like they are worthless and they're left behind. And I felt like that when my dad was sick. I went to University of North Carolina and I was in school when my dad was sick and I did not come up with these ideas when I was that age. We also didn't have cell phones. That really ages me. But so that actually helps having the cell phone. So my title, which I did give myself when my sister was sick as a joke to make her laugh, was the VP of communications. And the reason why I took on this role was because I wanted to be involved and I was determined to not be involved like my dad. Like I really wasn't involved when he was sick and I was kind of making up for that experience. And so I learned. And what I did was my brother lived down the street and so does my mom for my sister. We have a huge Irish family who lives in Philadelphia. And so, of course, these people love my sister. She's a lovely human being, and they want to support her. They want to text her and call her and email her and send her gifts and her daughters and my mom. They want to give everyone the love, which is wonderful. That is such a gift. At the same time, it can be overwhelming for the patient and the caregiver because, especially with their personalities, they felt like they need to respond to every text message and phone call, and they just didn't have the energy to do it. So what I said, I spoke to my family and I said, look, I'm going to take this off your shoulders. And Megan, because I was part of her core support team, I would know everything that was going on with her health because I was in constant contact with my family. But Megan and I would have discussions about what she was comfortable with me sharing with others and what she was not. So I was clear on the instructions because she is the patient. It's her health. So what I would do is I contacted my family. I set up several different text message chains, different groups of people who know each other, right? You don't want to have 100 people on a text message chain and then you know how that gets out of hand. We've all been in that situation. So I informed my family and my sister's good friends, I'm going to be your point of contact. I will fill you in on Megan's health situation. I'll let you know. And if you have any questions, please reach out to me instead of Megan or my mom or my brother or my brother-in-law. I'm happy to answer whatever I can. At the same time, there is a big asterisk. This does not mean you cannot reach out to them to share love and encouragement because they still need that. I just want you to know and not expect a response because you may not get one and it doesn't mean they don't hear you. They're just exhausted. And it worked great. In fact, at my sister's funeral, one of her friends got up and spoke and she mentioned this whole idea. And that's before I published the book or even started writing it. And I thought, I'm onto something there, because people need to, they need to be in touch with the person that they love who's sick, but they don't need to get that information from them. They can get it from someone else, and it can work great for everyone. So that's why I was her VP of communications.
I love that y'all set up boundaries of what you can share and what you can't, because not everybody needs to know every detail.
No, absolutely not. And really, it needs to come from the patient. Again, I realize not every patient can verbalize that, you know, with different diseases, but if they can, ask them to be clear and ask them a lot of questions. Some people are going to be so kind, they don't want to set boundaries, but they need to. It's just not everyone needs to know all that information.
No. Right.
And they don't need to be the, you know, superwoman, superman trying to handle it all. Just like you said, your mom said, they need to focus on their health. You've got this unstoppable support team that is willing and able to do, because how many times, and Pam, we've talked about this, how many times does someone say, hey, if you need anything, let me know. And this is the time, right, for you to go, I need you for this. I don't need you to do anything else. I need you to do this. And it's time to start calling in those favors.
So I have a suggestion for that, because that comes up a lot too, where we put the pressure on either the patient or the caregiver by saying, let me know if I can help you. Just like you said, let me know what I can do. Well, now I've got an assignment. So thanks. Now I'm not only sick and dealing with all of this emotional weight. Now you're telling me I've got to tell you what I need. Great. Awesome. Thank you. So guess what I'm going to do? Nothing. I'm not going to tell you anything. The better approach is to come to that patient or caregiver, depending on who that person is in your life, or maybe both, and say, here is a list of things I can do for you. And if you want to be cute about it, you could print it out and make a checkbox, you know, and make a whole list. These are things that I can do, ways that I can help. Check off the ones that work for you, and I am willing to step in whenever you need me. So it could be like, drive your kids to practice. I can make you a meal every Sunday night. You know, whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, some of us don't cook, so that one wouldn't be a great idea, but some of us are happy to drive our kids. Like, my best friend lives down the street. I would drive her kids anywhere if she was going through this. I'd be happy to jump in and do that. So do what works for you. It's working for you, the person that wants to be giving. And then you're taking the pressure off of the patient or the caregiver coming up with ideas, and you're giving them options. They may check one, none, or all 10, or however many you offer them. And I think that's the best way to approach it.
There, you know, talking about your tips, and we don't want to give away all your tips, right? Because we want to understand in a minute where they can go to pick up your book. And then we want to talk about your journals. But I want to talk about one more tip, is asking strong questions. Mm. This seems to be something that I know that maybe we've touched on maybe once, Pam, but not often. But let's explain to our listeners, what are strong questions and what are maybe like weak questions when they ask questions?
And I want to go back to one thing you said at the start, was not everyone has someone like me. I didn't feel like I was a badass advocate for my sister at the time, right? I didn't. I was just my sister. I'd do anything for her. I loved her so much. So don't feel like you have to have my experience in pharmaceutical sales to be a powerful advocate. You know, the tips that I share in the book are very simple, that anyone can do them. And this is one, and it just comes, it's a sales technique. So if anyone's been in sales, they'll know this one. So basically there are two types of questions. There are open-ended questions and there are closed-ended questions. And I know you're familiar with these. So the open-ended questions are your who, what, when, where, how questions. Closed-ended questions are do, is, are, can. A lot of times when we as humans are in an uncomfortable situation, for example, speaking to a doctor or giving pushback, we tend to default to closed-ended questions. Not all of us, but a lot of us do. And the reason why is it's more comfortable for us because we can control the conversation and we don't feel like we're putting the other person on the spot with an open-ended question. Open-ended question, the person listening to you and answering really needs to give you more information. So that can feel like if you're asking a doctor, well, you know, why did you prescribe that medication? That feels like you're putting a lot of pressure on them or questioning their ability to treat the patient. So I understand why we do that. What I would go back to is at the start, we talked about coming up with your list of questions. after you come up with that list of 10, 20 questions, review them. This is way before you get to the doctor's office, by the way. Don't do this while you're sitting in the waiting room. This should be done ahead of time. Go through your list of questions and look if any of them start with those close-ended words, can, do, is, are. If they are, see if you can turn them into an open-ended question. So for example, you could say, is it okay if she walks for 5 minutes a day? That is a very narrow question. I have not given the physician a lot of options. I'm asking something so specific. A better way to ask would be, what exercise is best for Megan? Now there's tons of options, because that physician could say, well, she could go for a walk. She could do a stationary bike. You know, she could go to the pool and maybe do a little bit of exercise in the pool. I mean, endless options, right? Yeah. And maybe 5 minutes isn't the right amount of time either. I said 5 minutes. Maybe it's 10. Maybe five's too much for her. She had a lung disease. So open-ended questions get you a lot more information. And sometimes physicians, because they are in a rush, if you ask a close-ended question, they will give you the minimal amount of information. They'll just answer what you've asked. They'll give you that, but they won't expand on it. So asking open-ended really kind of helps for you to get more information, more bang for your buck in that time.
And those would be your strong questions.
Those would be strong questions. I don't know if there are weak questions, but close-ended questions, they serve a purpose too. It's just a different purpose. And what I like to talk about is they are for more clarifying and confirming. So it's not that they're bad. For example, if a doctor says something and uses a medical term, I may want to clarify and say, so doctor, when you say this, is it this? You know, so I'm just clarifying. So doctor, when you say that it's okay for Megan to go for a 10-minute walk, is it okay if someday she isn't up for 10 minutes? Like, I'm clarifying. Like, what are the boundaries here? One tip there is to listen for subjective words. We use subjective words all the time and we don't realize it. So a subjective word could be, you know, I want to make sure that Miss Patient, you eat healthier from now on. Well, we all have different ideas to what healthy is. Does that mean vegan, vegetarian, keto? I mean, the options are endless, right? Yeah. So healthier is a subjective term where you could say, so doctor, can you expand on that and tell me what is, that's an open-ended question, what is healthier to you? What do you mean by healthier? Well, just cutting back on sugar, maybe not drinking alcohol, you know, whatever that is for that specific patient. So listen for the subjective words. And clarify. Don't be afraid to clarify and don't be afraid to ask questions. It is your right as the patient or the caregiver, especially when you have the patient's permission to ask questions. It is your right to ask questions of that physician. That's what they're there for. You don't have a medical degree, most of us at least. So go ahead and ask away.
So how was it for you and your family? You would go to the doctor, you have the app, you have all the questions, but then how did you communicate all the answers to those questions?
Yeah.
Is there an app for that?
Yeah, there might be now, you know, but there is an app for that, the way that we handled it. So we didn't figure this out until probably 6 months into my sister's illness. And this is why I wrote the book, because we didn't do everything perfect, but we learned a lot. And I hope that people can be badass advocates based on what we learned and do it better than we did. One of the best things we did was record conversations with physicians. As I mentioned, I live far away from my sister, and I realized my mom would most likely take my sister to the doctors. And when they came home, they were both exhausted and they didn't really want to rehash that entire conversation. Now, my mom is a phenomenal note taker. And she did a great job when my dad was sick taking notes. But you can only write down so much and remember so much, right? And so I suggested one day, next time you go, can you record the conversation and just ask the physician if it's okay? So little caveat, I always like to throw this out there. Always ask the physician, the nurse, whoever you're speaking to, for their permission to record the conversation. This is not to get them in trouble. It's not for lawsuits, not to catch them. It's really for your core support team and to improve communication. It's also a great tool for future doctor's appointments because we forget things. So you can always go back and listen to that recording and say, you know, I forget what the oncologist told me. Now I'm at the pulmonologist and I need to reiterate that. What was that? And you can always play that recording again. So we would go in, we'd ask the doctor, you know, if it's okay, we want to share this information with the rest of our family who's not here today. Is it okay with you if we record? We've never had an issue. I've given this advice many times. I've only heard of one person who I personally knew who said his wife's doctor, one of them said no. If that's okay, if that happens, it's okay. Don't panic. Just revert to your notes. Always have your notebook with you. If they allow you on the iPhone, and I'm sure Android has it too, there's a note, there's a recording, voice memos, it's called. And so what I would do is we would just record Megan. And if we weren't there, she could record herself, like in the hospital. Sometimes, you know, we were in between shifts and she would record those conversations. We just missed the doctor. You know how that goes. You're like, ah, I've been there all day. I left for 5 minutes to get a coffee and then the doctor shows up. So frustrating. So the other benefit that we didn't count on was we could hear Megan. And sometimes if we weren't there, one, we could see, did she ask the questions that we wanted to? Because maybe something was missed, or not even the patient. It could be an elderly parent, maybe, who forgot to ask the questions. And sometimes you can also catch if something is off. Because let's say you're not there. Let's say you have an elderly parent and they're recording themselves at the doctor's and you hear them and they don't sound like themselves. That may be a signal to you because you know the patient intimately and the doctor doesn't always. So there's an extra benefit there. And then the last benefit was my sister did pass away. So now I have all of these recordings of her voice that I didn't expect. It wasn't, that's not why we did it, but added bonus, I guess.
Yeah.
Added memories.
Yes. Yes.
Memories. Sweet memories.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's it. Let me ask you this, because again, we don't want to give the whole story away. Is there one more tip you want to share with our listeners? These have been so wonderful. I can almost feel and sense people jotting down notes left and right. Is there one more that we want to share about becoming a badass advocate?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things to do is not forget about the patient. Sometimes we're so busy fighting the disease, going to doctor's appointments, rushing them to the hospital, sleeping in the hospital, coming home from the hospital and transitioning back. I mean, all of this is exhausting. You know, if it's a cancer patient, you're sitting while they're getting their treatments and the whole thing is just very overwhelming for the patient and the family.
Yeah.
We don't want to forget about what the patient's going through emotionally. And sometimes we tend to do that. So one thing I wish I had done, and my sister and I were so close, I wish I had asked her more often, how are you doing today? Just that simple. Just checking in on them emotionally and giving that attention that they might not always get, because everyone's kind of like in the movies where everyone's running around and they're in slow motion and you're in fast forward. So just don't forget to check in.
Yeah.
Those are awesome tips for our listeners. Where can our listeners find your book at?
So I'm on Amazon, you know, like everything else in the world, right? I'm on Amazon. So Badass Advocate. And then I also have a website if this is easier. It's badassadvocate.com. And I have my book. I have journals on there. I have, like, I'll put this podcast up there. I have a gift shop. So one question I got asked all the time from my big family, and now even after I've lost, you know, my sister and my dad, I get asked for gift questions. Like, what is the best gift to give someone who just got a diagnosis? Or what is the best gift to give someone who's recently passed away, to their spouse or their child? So I have a little gift page, just of gift ideas. They're not mine. I haven't created them. There's, you know, different sellers, but it's just to help you when you're kind of stuck and you don't know what to get someone who's going through something difficult.
You know, as a human, we want to do for others. And so sometimes it's hard to find that perfect gift. So I am glad that our listeners can go to your website and get some ideas.
I know too, on your website, if I'm not mistaken, is a section about reputable information and good information. So not only is there stuff you can get, you know, purchase on there for a loved one and especially for yourself, but there's also one of the things I know, Pam, we are super big proponents of is finding good, credible, reliable information. And so you do have some resources on there as well.
Yes, it's so overwhelming. I felt that when my sister was sick. I was overwhelmed with where to go. And being in the pharmaceutical industry, we have some internal doctors and pharmacists that use some websites. They're government websites. So I put those up there. I would not have found them if I didn't work with them. So I wanted to share them because they're not a secret. It's just you don't know what they are or where to find them. And then companies that I've learned about along the way, there are so many people like the two of you that have gone through things that, you know, or they're in this career and they want to help. They create these companies and they're small and they're regional, but they will help anyone nationwide, but they're just, they might be in like Richmond, Virginia. Well, if you live in Dallas, Texas, you might not know about this little company, but they might have the one thing that you're looking for, the support that you need, and it might be hard to find them. So when I find those companies and I meet these people, I typically ask if I could put their website on mine. So yeah, they can share the resource that they are.
You know, there's so many resources out there, and it's just a matter of looking and finding the perfect one.
Yeah. And especially when you're thrown into the mix of it right when that happens, Pam, we always say, you don't need to know about us until you really need to know about us. And then at that point, it may be hard to focus on that. So take advantage of those resources that you can have that are listed there at badassadvocate.com.
You know, you also have a great blog out there. I was reading about an app that families can use, the Family Care Circle app. So, you know, there's always resources. Just go out there and look. Erin, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge on being a badass advocate. Do you have a Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you could share with our listeners?
Yes. So we talked about questions earlier, and I just want to stress the power that a good question can have. So soon after I published my book, I had a coworker whose father had a heart attack on, I think it was Christmas Eve. And she bought my book and she gave it to her mom, who was the main caregiver. And she said, you know, my mom's not that great at asking questions. So I told her, Mom, make sure you skip ahead to the part where you can learn how to ask good questions, because it was time sensitive, right? A lot of times when you're in the thick of it, you need to learn quick. And I know that's hard when you've got a book with lots of tips in it. So I'm glad she did that. And her mom read it. And the next doctor's appointment, she was asking all these questions. And when the appointment ended, the doctor said to her, I am so impressed. You asked some really great questions. And it just made me feel like, all right, that was it. I gave my gift. That's at least if I helped one family, one woman ask the right questions. I can't tell you what to ask because everyone's situation is different, but I can teach you how to form a good question. And that's all it took. And then she was getting the information she needed to be a badass advocate.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah, really is. And you know what I love about all of this, because I know the rest of the eight that we're going to discuss today, but you guys listen, seriously, this is not something that you go, well, I can't do that. That's too hard. Or I don't know how, I mean, I don't even understand. That's not the case. These are very simplistic things that you can deploy or find someone to deploy and help you while you're taking care of a loved one. So in all seriousness, it is a very simplistic thing for you to integrate into what you're going through at the moment. And so that's what I appreciate the most, is that it's boiled down and it's not complicated. And I think that's a very easy way for folks to understand. Would you agree, Erin?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And I will say that not only did we do these things with my sister, but I've used them again with my best friend's a three-time cancer survivor. I've used some of those things from afar. She lives in Ohio. And also my mother-in-law, who recently had a heart issue. So she was living with us. And again, we implemented with my in-laws some of these same tactics. And they're so simple. It's not that I'm like have this special talent. I've just figured out some things along the way, and I'm sharing with you because you can do it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us, Erin. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise that you've learned, as you said, along the way. And that really is it. It's really something that folks can take to heart and utilize, as you just said, cardiovascular disease, or, you know, whatever the case may be, Alzheimer's. This is not just a cancer scenario book, which I think is very appreciative as well. So thank you for sharing that with our listeners. Again, let's give them the website again. It's badassadvocate.com, correct?
That's correct.
And they can go there and check it out. They can get the link to Amazon and order your book right away. Pam, you know, this sounds like a broken record, but I learn something every time. And I think that our listeners, I hope our listeners do as well.
You know, I think that's our goal, is just to give them a little nugget that they can take. And, you know, we can all be an advocate for someone.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, especially if, as you and I have talked, you're going to be an advocate for someone eventually. There's just no doubt you will be an advocate for someone eventually. So this is a great book. Go check it out at the website, badassadvocate.com. I think this is a really important episode too, that maybe you order that book for your advocate. You know, if you're a cancer survivor in the middle of things, you feel this is going on, maybe this is just that subtle way for you to go, hey, you know what? I need your help, and I'm going to order this book and have it sent to my sister or my brother or, you know, my cousin. Help me out. I think that's a great way to do that, and just send that subtle little tip to them to let them know. Right, fam?
Yeah. I actually think most people buy it as a gift. It's funny you say that, like for a relative, for a friend, the patient, to their caregiver. That's most people will tell me, oh, I just bought your book for this other person, not even for themselves. Not that you can't buy it for yourself, but sometimes when you're the caregiver, the main caregiver, you're so in it, you're not looking for a book.
Right.
You are in the thick of it. So I love the idea of someone else thinking and being giving to someone else who's in it and needs that support. And if you're the patient, definitely get yourself a badass advocate because you need it.
Yeah. And that may just be the simplest way. Just have it drop to your brother, your sister.
Step up, man. Come on. I need you.
Like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not doing such a hot job. Maybe I need to step up.
And sometimes it's just lack of knowledge and experience. You know, you don't know. As you said, you're thrown into it. And it's not like we go through training for this. I mean, no one's telling us what to do. And it's kind of that guidebook that will help you, you know. And to your point earlier, you're also will always be an advocate for yourself. So I use these tips, not all of them, because I'm not sick, I'm healthy, but I have a doctor's appointment next week with a new doctor. I have been writing down questions for her for a month and making sure I don't forget what I need to ask her.
That's right. That's right. Well, I hope she's ready for you.
Yeah. I hope she doesn't listen to this. She's like, oh God, I don't know if I want this new patient.
Right. That's right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Our hope is that you've picked up a nugget here, picked up a nugget there. At least you know where to go to learn the rest of the tips to become a badass advocate. And make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships, as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.